Kunjabi Hare. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hare. Gopi Chanda Bala Bhagra Vare Hare. Gopi Chanda Bala Bhagra Vare Hare. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vana Chahari Yamuna Tira Vana Chahari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hare Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hare
Jai Om Vishnu Pad, Paramahamsa Prabhupada, Yukachara Sotera, Siddha Shri, Shimana's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anantakota Vaishnavinda Ki Jai, all glorious to some of the devotees, all glorious to some of the devotees, all glorious to some of the devotees, all glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Deva Dvisham Yagamavartmana Nishtatanam. Purbir Mayena Vihita Bir Adrishatirvi. Lokan Gnatam Mati Vimoham Mati Pralabhovam.
Lokan Gnatam Mati
Vimoham Mati Pralabhovam. Start again. Lokan Grinatam Mati Vimoham. I'm in trouble. Lokan Gnatam Mati Vimoham Mati Pralabhovam.
Lokan Gnatam Mati Vimoham.
Vesham Vidaya Bahubhashyata Apadaryam. Deva Dvarsham Yagamavartmani Nishtatanam. Purbir Mayena Vitabhira Drishyaturvi. Lokan Gnatam Mati Vimoham Mati Pralobham.
Lokan Gnatam Mati Vimoham Mati Pralobham.
Vesham Vidhaya Bahubhashyata Apadaryam.
Vesham Vidhaya Bahubhashyata Apadaryam.
Others?
Purbir Mayena Vihitabhira Drishyaturvi.
David Visham, of those who are envious of the devotees of the Lord. Nigama, the Vedas, Vartmani, on the path of Nishtitanam, of the well situated, who would be by rockets, Mayena. Made by the great scientist Maya. Vihitabi. Made by Adrishya Turbi. Unseen in the sky. Lokan. The different planets. The Natam. Of the killers. Mati Vimoham. Bewilderment of the mind. Ati Pralobham. Very attractive. Vesham. Dress. Vidhaya. Having done so. Bahu Bhashyate. Will talk very much. Alpad Harmyam. Sub-religious principles. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. When the atheist, after being well versed in the Vedic scientific knowledge, annihilate inhabitants of different planets, flying unseen in the sky on well-built rockets, prepared by the great scientist Maya, the Lord will bewilder their minds by dressing himself attractively as Buddha and will preach on sub-religious principles. Some of you in your history classes might have missed that part about the intergalactic warfare. Okay, this will be explained in the first sentence here. This incarnation of Lord Buddha is not the same Buddha incarnation we have in the present history of mankind. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the Buddha incarnation mentioned in this verse appeared in a different Kali age. In the duration of life of one Manu, there are more than 72 Kali Yugas, and one of them, the particular type of Buddha mentioned here, would appear. Lord Buddha incarnates at a time when the people are most materialistic and preaches common sense religious principles. Such ahimsa is not a religious principle in itself, but it's an important quality for persons who are actually religious. It is common sense religion because one is advised to do no harm to any other animal or living being, because such harmful actions are equally harmful to he who does the harm. But before learning these principles of nonviolence, one has to learn two other principles, namely to be humble and to be prideless. Unless one is humble and prideless, one cannot be harmless and nonviolent. And after being nonviolent, one has to learn tolerance and simplicity of living. One must offer respects to the great religious preachers and spiritual leaders, and also train the senses for controlled action. Learning to be unattached to family and home, and enacting devotional service to the Lord, etc. At the ultimate stage, one has to accept the Lord and become his devotee. Otherwise, there is no religion. In religious principles, there must be God in the center. Otherwise, simple moral instructions are merely sub-religious principles, generally known as upadharma, or nearness to religious principles. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurumi Tamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakopa Turubhishcha Kripa Sindhu Vyabhacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Prabhupada. Oh, I don't think I did. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. When you start doing these things out of order, you just realize another senior moment. Okay. Today is also the appearance day of Jayadev Goswami. And I'm hopefully at the end I have a little bit of time left. I'd like to speak a little bit about him. As we said, there is really no account of any kind of historical intergalactic warfare. This is interesting. They even have these like cloaking devices, you know, where they're invisible. Some of you may remember way back in the 60s at the show Star Trek. Anyway, they had these. So see, it's the same idea. They must have got it from, being there. Anyway, Prabhupada says that this Buddha does come from a different Kali Yuga, and we can see that. And he gives us on the authority of Srila Jiva Goswami. I looked, actually couldn't find the reference. I checked the Kramasundarbha Jiva Goswami's commentary on Bhagavatam on both this verse and the one in the first canto, third chapter, with the schedule of incarnations, and he doesn't really say that he's there, and he thought it might be in Krishnasundarbha, where he talks about the different incarnations leading up to Krishna. But anyway, I'm not sure exactly where it is, but I'm sure that it's somewhere. I'm not as good of a scholar of Jiva Goswami as I should be. Anyway, Jiva Goswami does say that the Buddha and Kalki also come every Kali Yuga. So we know that even if this was not the one in our Kali Yuga, there is a Buddha in Kali Yuga, every Kali Yuga. And that's the one we're more familiar with. And it's also Jiva Goswami mentions that he is an Avesha incarnation, or Shaktivesh. In other words, an empowered living entity who is empowered by Krishna to act on his behalf, but he's not Vishnu Tattva. So the Buddha in the first canto, in 1.3.24, clearly seems more like from our Kali Yuga. And Srila Prabhupada discusses his historical and spiritual role and importance. Prabhupada says in that purport, Srimad Bhagavatam was composed just prior to the beginning of the age of Kali, 5,000 years ago, and Lord Buddha appeared at about 2,600 years ago. Therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Buddha is foretold, such as the authority of this clear scripture. Thank you. This is in line with basically a historical account of Buddha, who appears, it depends, you can look at 10 different sources and get 10 different dates, but it's somewhere around 564 BC, 567. Some people even give it a little later in 600 BC, but it's in that general area about 2,600 years ago, halfway through Kali Yuga. And Prabhupada repeats this in several places. I was trying to look through the database to see where Prabhupada talks about Buddha. Now, there's some disagreement on this. In fact, even some of our devotee scholars, I read a couple places, that they say that the actual Buddha avatar was born much earlier, around 1800 BC, and that was a different one. And then, of course, some say that the Buddha incarnation was different than the historical Siddhartha Gautama that we know of, because there's discrepancies in the place of birth, parents' names, etc. So be that as it may, and I'm not absolutely sure one way or the other, but I don't think it's real important. Because, well, one of the discrepancies was it says in Bhagavatam he's born in Gaya, and the Gotama that we know of, they say, was born in Nepal. However, he did reach, got his, he was enlightened, his, you know, under the Bodhi tree and all that. He is enlightened and was in Gaya, which is in Bihar. So there could be some confusion there too. At any rate, that's all I know on this. But as I said, it doesn't matter that much, because either account, whether he was earlier or a little bit later, a few hundred years here and there, doesn't make too much difference, because he has the same purpose. Krishna always comes for particular purposes. And Buddha performed the function, a part of Krishna's plan to restore the true religion of Krishna Bhakti. So it was one of these, you know, three-step plans that Krishna had to restore the world, which was in a terrible condition, of course, after the advent of Kali Yuga, to a more righteous place, or place of that would be prepared for eventually Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be able to distribute pure love of God. So in Kali Yuga, the society was very, very degraded, and Vedic sacrifices were performed in the name of animal slaughter. So there was much animal slaughter, killing of animals going on. And so one of Buddha's main purposes was to stop this misuse of animal slaughter. But by doing so, he rejected the Vedas entirely. He said, you're using all of these Vedic sacrifices, all of this karmakanda, for the purpose of violence and killing. Therefore, give it all up, forget it. And he preached, of course, his own philosophy. Now, in several places it's mentioned, and I think we could factually say, that Buddhism is a type of atheism. Even though Buddha is an incarnation of Krishna, an incarnation of God, he preached against the concept of God. So it's a very, sometimes it's called voidism, or it's extreme, it's even beyond impersonalism, actually. A voidism is basically saying there's really no God. Now, there's some sort of, I don't know what it is, there's some sort of spiritual essence, or, you know, somehow you try to achieve nirvana. And, you know, some of their philosophy is very correct, you know, like the, what is it, the Four Noble Truths, something like this. Basically, say this material world is a place of suffering. Suffering comes because of desire. If you give up desire, you'll give up suffering. Well, it's true. If you give up material desires, you can, well, eliminate suffering. But then where are you? In this void. You know, it's, I've never seen the attraction, but millions of people are. But you, in reality, if you ever actually observe Buddhist practice, it's full of devotion. It's devotion to Buddha, to bodhisattvas, to all kinds of deities, imagery. So it's like these very, very strict Zen Buddhist types. I think that's very much minor. Most people, average people, are not that attracted to a philosophy or religion that really has no worship, has no person, no variegatedness, no love, no reciprocation relationship. You know, but just like Prabhupada says, people who actually do achieve impersonal realization and go to Brahman, they can't stay there, because it's not the nature of the soul. The nature of the soul is to want variety, to want activity, to want love. And ultimately, our soul yearns to be back in relationship with the Supreme Soul, Krishna. So at any rate, the point was that people followed him. They gave up meat eating, which was good, and it led a better framework for a more pious society. And also they gained benefit by following him or worshiping him, because he was an incarnation of Krishna. So they gained benefit in that way. Now, Krishna's plan was, because of the misuse of the Vedas, Buddha would reject the Vedas, save the animals. But then along comes Sankaracharya, about 750 AD, and you can find 20 different dates on this, but it's somewhere in that area, 750 AD. And he reestablishes the authority of the Vedas. He convincingly gets people back onto the Vedic track, but he gives an impersonal interpretation, a Mayavadi interpretation of the Vedas. But because the Vedas were accepted, at least there was a basis for argument. And then some of the great stalwart Vaishnavas came along, like Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, often defeated the Shankarites, or defeated the Mayavadis many, many times, and they started establishing Vaishnavism again. Finally, what is it, 1486, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears, and he completes the cycle and gives the most complete philosophy of Chintabheda-Bheda-Tattva, and establishes Krishna Prema for the benefit of the entire world, the entire universe. So this is, you know, and we could say so much more about Buddha and Ahimsa and nonviolence and its importance. I'll talk about it a little bit. But I think there's a very interesting point here about the Vedas. And, well, of course, our previous verse was about Vyasadeva, how he came to reestablish the Vedic knowledge. He is also an incarnation. And he, of course, he actually wrote down all of the Vedas. But first, he broke them all down. He took one Veda into four. And then, of course, he wrote the Puranas, the Itihasas, you know, well, the Upanishads, etc. But it was interesting because last Saturday when Hridayananda Maharaj was here, he was speaking a lot about the Vedas, difficulty understanding, how they're subject to misinterpretation. Then yesterday in the class about Vyasadeva, Brahmatirtha Prabhu was talking about also a lot of the confusion and understanding the purpose. For instance, he mentioned that Indra is discussed more than Vishnu in the Vedas. In other words, there's so much about karmakanda, about sacrifice, about rituals. Maharaj was also talking about this. All of this ritualistic type of activity, it's very, very difficult. And it's very confusing for many people. So because so much of this rituals are there, it became easily misused. And so it's not surprising in Kali Yuga that those smarta Brahmin priests would use the Vedic, so-called Vedic knowledge or Vedic sacrifices or whatever, completely misuse them for the purpose of animal sacrifice. Now, animal sacrifice, of course, is there. But as we probably all know, animal sacrifice involved an old animal sacrificed and he was rejuvenated and got a new body. It wasn't like it was a, you know, this was basically they're operating slaughterhouses under the name of sacrifice. So, now, this whole process is interesting, and the Jiva Goswami discusses this in the Tattva Sandarbha, the first of his six Sandarbhas, because what Jiva Goswami Maharaj wants to do is establish the Srimad Bhagavatam as the supreme scripture, as the authority. And he does it very meticulously over, you know, like 100 pages or so, discussing the Vedas and all of the steps. Now, he assumes that people accept basic Vedic philosophy. He's not arguing with atheists or, you know, people of different religions. So assuming that you're in this basic framework or sort of within a Hindu framework or whatever, then he tries to show step by step to how the Bhagavatam is established as supreme. Well, so the first thing he says, this is in text 14 of Tattva Sandarbha, that there, by the way, there's two translations of it, one by Gopi Puranadana and one by Banaswami Maharaj. They're both good. Gopi Puranadana is very, very scholarly. If you had a chance to read it, I was just looking at it again the last couple of days because I hadn't really read it all the way through his version. And he's an excellent scholar. I was so impressed by his writing and his knowledge. So anyway, I think he did a great job with it. And of course, it was his last, wasn't it his last book published? I think it was his last writing before he passed away. And it was actually published, I think, after his departure. So anyway, it's a wonderful thing that he left. Anyway, Jiva Goswami text 14 states that the Vedas do come directly from Krishna. They're called apurusheya. In other words, no person wrote them. They're divinely inspired. They're coming from God. But they cannot be understood in Kali Yuga without the Puranas and other supplementary texts and information. In fact, here's what he says in text 14. The authoritative sound of the Vedas is impossible for anyone in the present times to study completely. Its meaning is difficult to construe, and even the sages who have explained in commentaries disagree among one another. For these reasons, we would be well advised to turn our attention to the Shabda Praman of the Itihasas and Puranas, which is substantially non-different from the Vedas and which definitively explain what the Vedas mean. So this is kind of interesting. We have some philosophical debates or differences of opinion within our ISKCON society, and some of our colleagues, particularly from India, you know, are basically stating that the Vedas, you know, they're pushing Varnashram very strongly, and they're saying the Vedas are the only standard. In fact, one of their main leaders of that, on the one side, you know, basically, he actually said in a lecture, which got him in a lot of trouble in North America, that Srila Prabhupada was not the final authority, the Vedas are the final authority. Well, you know, that does not sit well with most of us who are Prabhupada's disciples, because we feel that basically, yeah, how can we understand all this? Prabhupada is our final authority. End of discussion, okay? Now, beyond that, they would quote, he also, of course, were very much against women gurus, and so they were quoting, you know, how it's stated. And in fact, they were, which makes me angry, presumptuously quoting Jiva Goswami incorrectly, that it's basically just a Bhagavatam verse. It says that women, sudras, and vijabandhus are not eligible to read the Vedas. Well, Jiva Goswami quoted that not to say that women are, to say that everyone is ineligible. Kalo sudra sambhava. Everyone is sudra in Kali Yuga. None of us are qualified to understand the Vedas. And you know, you can see, even I think Maharaj was giving us a little idea of the extent and the complexity of the Vedic literatures, you know, that it's very, very difficult to understand like that. So that is why we need these supplementary level, and Jiva Swami goes step by step through. He spends many time in many, many verses establishing that the Puranas and the Itihasas are actually part of the Vedas. They're not different. They are different, but they're totally in sync. They're explanations, they define things better, they make it more clear so there aren't misunderstandings. Of course, the Itihasas are the histories, and the most important ones to us are the Ramayana and Mahabharata. Right? Those are the main Itihasas that we know. Of course, Mahabharata contains Bhagavad Gita. So that's essential for Vaishnavas. Now, when we look at the Puranas, there are 18 Puranas, but even the Puranas can be confusing. You try to make sense of all the Puranas because they're written for people in the modes of different modes of nature. There are 6 Puranas for people who are, not that they are in the modes, but there are 4 people in the modes of ignorance, passion, and goodness. And according to Machya Purana, Jiva Goswami says that the Vishnu Purana, Narada Purana, Garuda Purana, Padma Purana, Varaha Purana, and of course the Bhagavat Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, are those in the mode of goodness. And those are the ones that they say the Vaishnavas are more interested in studying. So you see that Prabhupada quotes quite a bit from Padma Purana, Vishnu Purana, and different acharyas do a lot. These are Vaishnava literatures. And they have many, many wonderful descriptions of Krishna and Krishna's pastimes like that. And on top of it, Srila Vyasadeva gave us the simplified version of the Puranas with only 400,000 verses. Bhagavatam is 18,000, so it makes sense. You know, some of them are much longer than Bhagavatam. There's going to be 400,000 total. You know how many they have on the upper planetary systems? The Brahma's reading, when he's reading the Upanishads? 1 billion verses. That's again and then quoted by Jiva Goswami from the Machya Purana. So you can just see our small brains in Kali Yuga. You know, we have enough trouble trying to keep up with, you know, the reading that we all think, oh, there's so many things I should be reading and or trying to understand, and it's so difficult. And we have just a tiny portion of, you know, what they have in the upper planetary systems. So there still may be some confusion, because there's different modes, there's different worship mentioned for different people. So then it may be suggested that, well, we need some very concise, you know, like the essence, and that would be Vedanta Sutra. Is supposed to be sort of like boils it down to the essence. You know, they all in codes, kind of, you know, the aphorisms. But in text 18, Jiva Goswami says, some sages may interpret the terse, highly esoteric aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra in a way that distorts their meaning. Highly esoteric. In other words, it's not that easy to understand Vedanta Sutra. I know the first, you know, most of us know the first 2 verses, right? Prabhupada. What is it? Tato Brahma Jnasa, Janmanisha, Janmanisha Yata. Right. In other words, now is the time for self-realization. But you know, and that's about all we know. And you know, most of us would get lost if we went much further. So there's a problem with that too. So where do we go? You all know where this is leading. Oh, by the way, as far as the story of the meeting, Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya based a lot of his philosophy on Vedanta Sutra. In other words, the book that was supposed to clarify it all, he totally unclarified, totally confused everybody, and came out with a Mayavadi interpretation of Vedanta Sutra. So this isn't really going to work. So what we need, and then finally, of course, Jiva Goswami firmly convinced the establishes on the basis of hundreds of quotes from all different scriptures that the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Amala Purana, the spotless Purana, is the final authority, and it has distilled all Vedic wisdom to its essence. And of course, the Bhagavatam itself says, what are the scriptures needed if we have the Srimad Bhagavatam? So we are so fortunate that we have the Bhagavatam, and in fact, the Srimad Bhagavatam explains its own origin and necessity back in the seventh chapter in Narada's Instructions to Vyas, right? No, I think it is. Anyway, I've got the verses here, I just didn't write them with it. Anyway, because Vyasadeva, he did all this, he compiled all this, and he's just, this amazing, incredible. Of course, he is the literary incarnation of Krishna. He is empowered to do this specifically by Krishna in Kali Yuga, and apparently it happens every Kali Yuga. Might be a different Vyas, but every Kali Yuga, a Vyas comes and does this, writes down the Vedas. But then he wasn't feeling right about it once he had done this. And he goes to Narada Muni, who is his spiritual master. And Narada's glorifying him, he says, I see you still feel morose. And he says, yes. So Narada says, you have not actually broadcast the sublime and spotless glories of the personality of Godhead. That philosophy which does not satisfy the transcendental senses of the Lord is considered worthless. I mean, he's basically saying everything you've done right so far is worthless. That's pretty heavy. Although a great sage, you have very broadly described the four principles, beginning with religious performances. You have not described the glories of the Supreme Personality of Vasudeva. In a famous verse, those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. Since the all-perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. So, and of course, Jiva Goswami Pad goes on and on and on, establishing the Srimad Bhagavatam, and you're pretty convinced by the time you finish it. So our conclusion of all of our acharyas, especially the six Goswamis, all of them, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Sankara, Srila Prabhupada, consider the Srimad Bhagavatam the final word in transcendental knowledge. It's our proof. It's our standard of judgment. If you want to base anything, judge anything, you want to say, well, what's our final proof? No, it's not the Vedas. It's Srimad Bhagavatam for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And why else would Srila Prabhupada have made that his life's work? That was his main thing that he wanted to contribute. Of course, he wanted to make devotees, he wanted to establish temples, he wanted to spread the chanting of the holy name all over the world, but his personal mission was to write, to translate the Srimad Bhagavatam into English and make that available to all of us in Kali Yuga. Now, so I think we have pretty good consensus amongst the Vaishnavas on this. So, I was going to say one other thing. Even the Srimad Bhagavatam, being Kali Yuga, apparently many hundreds of years ago, there were many different versions. You could kind of get different versions, and some had these verses, and some were missing those verses. And fortunately, we had Srila Sridhar Swami. And he was, about 200-300 years before Lord Chaitanya, I think? Something like that, yeah. Anyway, he only did two, Vishnu Purana and Bhagavat Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, word for word, verse by verse, to authenticate them. And this is according to Gopi Prananda, his commentary. I have no reason to doubt it. But he was saying this, how he completely verified the authenticity of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which we have today. And this is the one we're all using. In fact, it's interesting because of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved this, and there's that famous story. Who was his disciple who decided he had a better version, a better commentary? Anybody remember?
Pallavacharya.
Who was it?
Pallavacharya.
Pallavacharya. Okay. So he thought, I've got a better commentary than Sridhar, as he proudly presents it to Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya basically threw him out of the room, practically. And he says, you don't step over the head of the master, the Swami, Sridhar Swami. So I was noticing when you read Jiva Goswami's Bhagavatam commentaries very carefully. He always quotes Sridhar Maharaj. He's always saying, in fact, he'll even talk about that. He says, let's say this verse is missing in some editions, you know, he said, but Sridhar says that this verse is here. And so, you know, that becomes, we have a standard. You know, it's not, so we have a verified standard of the Srimad Bhagavatam that all of our acharyas accept. You know, so we have absolute last word that helps us to understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay. So, back to Lord Buddha. He established the essential concept of ahimsa, or nonviolence. He helped it end the animal slaughter. Now, it's interesting that Prabhupada says that nonviolence is called upadharma, a sub-religious principle. Prabhupada says that in religious principles, there must be God in the center. Otherwise, simple moral instructions are merely sub-religious principles, generally known as upadharma, or nearness to religious principles. So, these principles, like nonviolence, are generally the mode of goodness. Now, the mode of goodness is, Prabhupada says in 1824, he says, the mode of goodness benefits the world, gives us the possibility of peace and prosperity. So it's a very good position for the world, and it helps us to set a strong foundation for Krishna consciousness. But it's not Krishna consciousness in itself. A person could be living a very good life, be in the mode of goodness. I've known very few, but a couple people who basically follow the four regular principles who aren't really very religious, you know, for whatever reason. So in other words, those things are needed. We have the four regular principles. They're required. That's our foundation. If you're doing sinful activity, you basically can't be a devotee. I mean, really, and not really, you can be a devotee. I shouldn't say that. But you're going to have trouble. You're going to struggle being a devotee if you're leading a sinful life. And hopefully, if you're chanting, you'll be able to give up that sinful activity. But it has to be there as a foundation. That's the basis. Now, from that basis, then we have the positive activity of Krishna consciousness. And that's really what brings us forward and helps us to advance in Krishna consciousness. And ultimately be able to get out of this material world and go back home, back to Godhead. Oh, I thought I was losing a couple pages here. Okay, so Krishna must be the center. And devotees naturally develop good qualities. These qualities are important. Prabhupada mentions these different qualities, humility, pridelessness, nonviolence. These are all important. It's not that they're not important. It's not that a devotee... sometimes we had this attitude, believe it or not, 50 years ago. We can do anything we want. We're devotees. You know, we're not bound by rules and regulations. You know, we're devotees of the Lord. You know, so all that. You know, who cares? Good, bad. You know, whatever. You know, pious, impious. We're beyond dualities. No, a devotee does not act that way. A devotee acts in the mode of goodness. A devotee acts piously. A devotee follows. I mean, it's like we follow the laws of the country, even though they have no spiritual basis. You know, we're not like, you know, we want to be good citizens of the world, and we want to contribute and help people and be and develop good qualities personally. But beyond that, we want to develop God consciousness. We want to develop a relationship with Krishna. That's our goal. And if you don't have that, just as Prabhupada said, you can't really have self-realization without God. Some people think, you can be self-realized. No, the self is meaningless without God. This is the self. We are from God. We are part of God. There's no question of separateness from God. Anyway, so these are some of the ideas that are here, and we could go on further. But I do want to say something about Jayadev Goswami. Too much time. Okay, Jayadev Goswami was a great Vaishnava. At one point, Prabhupada calls him a Vaishnavacharya from the 11th or 12th century. Again, a lot of dispute on his date, but he goes way back. 11th or 12th century, lived primarily, and he lived sometime in Navadvip, in Vrindavan. I think he ended up in Jagannath Puri, where he passed away. And this is well before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I mean, but he's very famous for basically a couple things. His songs, one of them being the Dasavatar Stotram, which we sing every morning, every afternoon, the Nrisinga prayers. These are the Das Avatars from Jayadeva. And of course also Gita Govinda. I guess that was his really big work, his opus, you know, was his poems, Gita Govinda, which is really about Radha and Krishna. Very, very deep, somewhat, I guess you could say, what's the word, intimate. In other words, it's fairly advanced. But Lord Chaitanya loved to hear the poetry of Jayadeva Goswami. In Ancha 17, it's described how Ramananda Roy would quote verses from the books of Vijayapati and Chandidas, and especially from the Gita Govinda by Jayadeva, to complement the ecstasy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there's other verses also in the Madhya Lila that talk about how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu enjoyed hearing the Gita Govinda and the verses of Jayadeva. So very important spiritual leader. Here's the verse. I'm not going to read the sentence. Okay, Lord Krishna, the enemy of Kamsa, these are a couple of verses that are quoted in Madhya CC that are directly, these are verses from Gita Govinda that are there. Lord Krishna, the enemy of Kamsa, took Srimati Radharani within his heart, for he desired to dance with her. Thus he left the arena of the Rasa dance in the company of all the other beautiful damsels of Raja. Being afflicted by the arrow of Cupid, unhappily regretting his mistreating of Srimati Radharani, Madhava, Lord Krishna, began to search for her along the banks of the Yamuna River. When he failed to find her, he entered the bushes of Vrindavan and began to lament. So this is, you know, of course, a little flavor. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita of his writing. And I was going to try to read the Sanskrit, but because it's poetry, I was sure I would mangle it and, you know, try to make a mess of it. So I didn't want to do that, to try to this one. Here's a real short biography. 300 years before, this is from Chaitanya, what's that? Kwanada Chalpati, Desire Tree, that website? ISKCON Desire Tree, anyway, that's where I got it, so if there's any mistake. Yeah, so if there's any mistakes, it's their fault. 300 years before the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Jayadeva Goswami served as court pandit of Sri Lakshman Sen, King of Bengal. Jayadeva and Padmavati, his wife and expert dancer, used to worship Lord Sri Krishna with single-minded devotion. After some time, he left the opulent royal life to live peacefully in a grass hut in Champahati, Navadvip. Here, Jayadeva wrote the Gita Govinda. One day, while working on Gita Govinda, Jayadeva felt inspired to write, "Krishna bows down to touch the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani." Then Jayadeva was hesitant to say something which might diminish Lord Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He says, "I don't know if I should write that. He touches Radharani's feet, you know." He went to refresh himself with a Ganges bath before honoring Radha Madhava's Mahaprasadam. In his absence, Krishna himself, disguised as Jayadeva, wrote a line in the Gita Govinda, "Dehi Pada Palavam Udaram." The Lord also accepted Prasad from Padmavati. Upon returning, Jayadeva was astonished to see the line. Understanding the mystery, Jayadeva cried in spiritual joy and said, "Padmavati, we are most fortunate. Sri Krishna himself has written the line, Dehi Pada Palavam Udharam, and taken Prasadam from your hand." Gita Govinda expresses the intense feeling of separation from Sri Radhika felt before the Rasa dance. It also describes the most intimate pastimes of Radha Shama Sundar. During Lord Chaitanya's Gambhira Leela in Jagannath Puri, he would thoroughly relish hearing the Gita Govinda sung daily by Sarup Damodar and Mukunda. The author Jayadeva describes Gita Govinda, "Whatever is delightful in varieties of music, whatever is graceful and fine strains of poetry, and whatever is exquisite in the sweet art of love, let the happy and wise learn from the songs of Jayadeva." After finishing Gita Govinda, he visited Vrindavan and then lived his last in Jagannath Puri. He introduced daily reading of the Gita Govinda in the temple for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath, and his samadhi is there. I've read this Srila Prabhupada mentions in a purport, and both by, and also Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he quotes from, "Caution, the topics of Gita Govinda are very confidential and are easily misunderstood by those with material desires and should only be read by very advanced devotees." So I have the Gita Govinda in my bookshelf, and I haven't read it yet. I'm waiting to become an advanced devotee. Okay. Now, what do we know him probably even better for? And let's Dasavatar Stotram. I hate to try to sing. Okay. Anybody know? I'm trying to do the one for Lord Buddha. Anyway, Keshava Drita Buddha Shavira Jai Jagdish Hari. O Keshava, O Lord of the universe, O Lord Hari, who have assumed the form of Buddha, all glories to you. O Buddha of compassionate heart, you decry the slaughtering of poor animals performed according to the rules of Vedic sacrifice. So it's kind of a good wrap-up here from Buddha to Jayadev and his glorification of Lord Buddha and the Dasavatar Stotra. Okay, thank you all very much. Any questions, comments?
Yes.
Thank you for your class. You said there are 18 Puranas.
I'm sorry?
You said there are 18 Puranas?
18,
Yes, and six of them are in the mode of goodness and passion and ignorance. Are the same stories being told in each Purana, but for the different mode of people? Or because sometimes I heard that the story of where Krishna got, the Brahmin who was reciting the mantra for Indra, the same story was told in, I don't know if it was in different Puranas, but one in one Purana, Krishna was glorified more, and the other one, you know. So the same stories are told in different
Puranas. I'm not sure about that, honestly. I don't know them well enough. I don't know how many have actually been translated into English. I mean, at least it's not in terms of a bona fide, you know, translation that, you know, that we have. Now, one thing, I don't think it's exactly like that, because I think it's more that they're mixed a little bit, because I've seen our acharyas, the Goswamis, in their writings, quote from some of these other Puranas that are not in these, you know, like Matsya Purana. That's in Passion, or, you know, it's not one of the six, I don't think, was it? I'm not sure, it was Matsya. Anyway, maybe it was, but anyway, so just like in the Vedas, and just like any of them, there's, you know, there's little jewels and nuggets in all of them, I think, but it's the predominance. It's kind of like what they're more oriented around, you know. So I don't think they're the same story, just told in three different ways. I mean, it's more like, what's the predominant mood of that? And, you know, because the mode of passion really means trying to go to the higher planets, basically. Ignorance, I guess, is just trying to uplift people's somewhat moral principles and things.
Just a simple comment. You say you're waiting for some advanced devotee to read your the book you have. But isn't by reading we become advanced? I mean, we're not advanced just by reading the Shastras every day. I'm hoping you become a little advanced.
Back up, slower,
okay.
Louder.
The last comment you made,
but
you said
advanced.
You're waiting for an advanced devotee to read, what was the book?
Yes. One should be advanced devotee, yes.
But don't we become advanced by reading the Shastra every day, hoping to get more and more purified?
Well, yeah. I was being a little bit facetious. I'll probably read it.
Someday. I know.
But,
I couldn't help making that comment, sorry.
No, but one has to be careful. In other words, another campaign is distributed out on the street on Sankirtan, you know. In other words, these things are meant for serious devotees who have a good understanding. And, you know, like all throughout the 10th canon, Prabhupada gives, you know, in Krishna book, doesn't he give warning after warning after warning? Try to understand this. The relation around Krishna is not material. This is not like mundane relationships between boys and girls, right? In other words, now when you get something like Gita Govinda, it's more intimate. You know, it's, you know, and so you have to really understand that well. And I think what they're implying is you need to be fairly free of sex desire yourself, or you might take things the wrong way, or start trying to read it for a certain enjoyment, you know, which would be very offensive. But on the other hand, it's kind of like, you know, in the chapters of the Rasa Dance in Bhagavatam, isn't it the end of, I don't know if it's the last chapter, but one of the chapters it ends with, and I don't know the verse, some of our friends might know the verse, where it says that if one hears the Rasa Dance, these pastimes, one will become free from sex desire. It doesn't say you have to be free from sex desire before you can read it. It says it will help you to become free if you sincerely, isn't that right?
Yeah, the chapter, last verse, follow suit. The result of hearing
Isn't that, that's the last verse in one of the chapters.
33.
And Prabhupada did translate the Krishna book, you know, before he did
Exactly. Oh, yeah. We've been given so much way beyond our level of realization. Chaitanya Charitamrita has lots and lots of deep information and very, about Krishna's relationship with Radha and like that. So, yeah, and I think it just means it's not for casual readers. If you're a serious devotee, you know, it's probably not a problem. You know, you kind of know when you read something whether it's right for you. You know, like I read some things that I really enjoyed and other ways that I didn't really get it. And then I found, like, I'll give an example. I was trying to read Ujjvala Nilamani, which is a very advanced text for Rupa Goswami, and I stopped reading it because I realized I wasn't there. I realized I was not, I don't know, I just felt like it was beyond my level of realization. I said, I thought I better wait on that, you know? wait a little while, go back to Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita for a while, you know.
I was thinking, every four yugas, there is a Kali Yuga, and in Kali Yuga, Lord Buddha comes.
Yeah.
So sometimes we say history repeats, but then I was thinking the other day, history doesn't repeat, it is the people's mentality repeats. What calls that same scenery is created. History is not a person. I'm saying history is not a person that pops. It is the mentality of the people that goes down, and they see the similar things are being exploited and all this. So we say history repeats. But my point was that there is a similar types of people to exploit in different ages.
Right.
What causes that maybe repeating the history.
Yeah.
So when we say Buddha comes, he comes to divert from those exploiter of Vedic religious practitioners. So that means every Chaturyuga, four yuga cycle, there are exploiter of the religion.
Exactly.
So that's what causes.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to say. That why I said it doesn't make that much difference, the details, because it's the same principle, isn't it?
Correct.
In other words, in Kali Yuga, people misuse, they're in material consciousness, they're misusing scriptures, whatever, and Buddha comes in some way, you know, to correct that.
Because it appears like, is the Buddha or Kalki is predestined, or actually people declining to be spiritual is causing them to appear. So are they causing them, the Buddha and Kalki, to appear?
No,
it is predestined?
No, obviously Krishna wants the welfare of everyone. He's not causing people to become fallen, you know. But it's that there are more, somehow or another, just the way things are arranged, the fallen people are here in Kali Yuga, you know. And that's, I guess it's just that we get parceled out. You know, those of us who are really fallen, we got to be born here. And then we have to have Buddha, and if we don't get it, and then we have to have Lord Chaitanya, and if we really don't get it, we have to have Kalki at the end.
There's one online question for somebody's asking. What is the Bible's connection to Vedic scriptures?
What is the final connection?
What is the Bible's connection to Vedic scriptures?
What is the Bible's connection to the Vedic scriptures?
Bhavishya Purana.
Hmm?
I saw it in Bhavishya Purana. You read one of those Puranas Bhavishya Purana.
Go ahead, then. Go ahead.
Ishu's name is there.
Whose
not
name?
Jesus.
Name?
Ishu.
Oh. Okay.
Because biblical name is Isha,
mm-hmm.
not Jesus. The English mm-hmm. speaker, they came up with the Jesus.
Yeah. Well, Prabhupada has mentioned that he is an avatar, a Shaktivesha avatar,
yes.
And Muhammad was a Shaktivesha avatar. They're empowered living entities. And he's also explained that just as Buddha taught sub-religious principles for very, very fallen people, misusing the Vedas, when he comes or empowers other living entities to come and preach, it's for a particular time and place and circumstance. So, you know, the people were not real advanced 2,000 years ago in the Mideast, apparently, and Jesus had to teach very simple principles. You know, thou shalt not kill. That seems pretty obvious, you know. Well, that was actually back in the Ten Commandments, right? I don't know anything about the Bible. I better just be quiet. Anyway, but love thy neighbor, you know, love your fellow man, that kind of thing. Okay. Okay, well, we've got a garage.
Yeah. In the Bible it says, in Revelations, it says, the Lord will come on a white horse with a sword. And in the Bhagavatam it says, Kalki will come on a white horse with a sword.
There you go.
So there's many other quotes that are similar to the Vedas, many. Like one is, it says, they will come with the mark of the Lord on their forehead. And, of course, you can.
Yeah.
And blessed are the pure of heart, for they shall see God. So there's so many quotes that are.
I think we have a similar situation, but there's probably things that are true and things that may be more questionable. And, you know, it's kind of all a little mixed together.
And it also says the golden eagle and Garuda and so many things.
Okay.
Yeah, so that must mean it's qualified.
Okay.
Look, the Bible is glorifying God. It's trying to connect people to God. The Vedas are doing that. Some may be a little bit more, you know, postgraduate, we say. Some may be a little bit more introductory, you know. The same, exactly. See, he gets it. So, you know, it's like that. It's all good. Except the parts we don't agree with. That's no good.
There you go. Okay, anyway, I think we're just very extremely fortunate that somehow or another we have Srimad Bhagavatam, the highest Purana, the highest knowledge, the highest truth, and we also have the pure devotee of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, who's been able to translate and comment on it so that we can understand it even further. Jai. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada.